This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 627, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 627. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. This is my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
Sedate Josh Flanagan.
I don't know. That was like neutral. I didn't know what to do. And it just came out. I was like, oh, you're a robot. That's good.
Together, we are iFanboy. And every week, we read a bunch of comics. One of us, we picks their favorite book, call that the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book, some other books of the week, some listener mail, some patron powers, anything we can do to entertain you.
Anything.
Have a good time. Anything. We'll dance for you. You won't be able to see it, but we'll do it.
Or we'll tell you we are anyway.
Here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show. There'll be some spoilers, exercise some caution, and some forethought this week. Josh, surprising pick. Not surprising, but we'll get to
Well,
that.
Yeah. So the pick of the week is Jessica Jones, number 18. And this was a forced read from Connor. So you could read that. And so we haven't talked about why. That's kind of how it works.
Because you haven't been reading the series because you just didn't jump on it, even though you love Bendis's Jessica Jones character, written by him.
I don't know if I would say love.
Well, you quite enjoyed the original.
Yeah, I did. I liked it a lot, but I also tend to consign that to that was a thing that happened at a time, and I don't necessarily like feel compelled to jump on it every time. And I kind of enjoy it, but I obviously don't feel compelled to follow up on all of it, I guess.
So I finished reading it, which is the final issue of the run as Bendis moves to DC next month. And I texted Josh and I said, you should probably read the last Jessica Jones issue. Mm-hmm. That's what happened.
Yeah. So that was basically why, just because it seemed significant and we would be talking about it. Was that the reasoning there?
Well, and I thought it was really good.
Okay.
It probably would have been my pick as well.
So.
But also, it was the final issue. And it's, you know.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong. Has Gatos been on this?
He's been on this particular run the whole time. Yes.
He has? Okay. I remember like the beginning of the arc was that weird thing where, like, she was going through her thing, but nobody recognized it or something like that. And I didn't really love that storyline. I don't like those kind of storylines. The thing where one person can't tell we can't tell what's going on, but the one person realizes it or vice versa. Mm-hmm. I think there's a movie out like that now with the Unsane, where the lady's in the hospital and she thinks she's not crazy. But everybody is saying she is. I hate that. It makes me really
uncomfortable. Soderbergh's iFanboy movie. I mean, not iFanboy movie. That'd have been shocking. No, it's iPhone movie.
Yeah. So I read this, and once again, as will often be the case with me, I find that I often get my enjoyment of stories, not all the time, but sometimes it will help when you have a little context. So I read it, I really enjoyed it as a thing, but I read Bendis's little wrap-up page at the end, sort of talking about what he had done what the story had meant to him and sort of how he'd envisioned sort of this last story that he would write. And I liked the context of it. And it was that he just wanted to give Jessica one perfect day. And he says, not a perfect day for you or me or a perfect day, but a perfect day for her. It's, you know, a case that she solves. That's a challenge for her. That is a thing, all while holding it together. And I was like, I really like that. I think he communicated that. And I thought it was a really interesting story and character choice.
And it was a nice little one issue.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not connected to anything really other than her thinking about other stuff. But this is just she gets a case and she solves the case. That was really, really fun and nice.
And really, while, you know, this didn't like knock everything else out of the way, there was a reason to sort of take her back to what she was when we met her, which is, you know, this private eye who's doing this thing. And she explains it. They do explain away the fact that they're kind of not dealing with the continuity. It's that, you know, she wants to pay her own bills. She knows she has rich friends. She doesn't have to, but she wants to do this job because it's what she's meant for. And so the fact that she's married to Luke Cage, she has a kid or whatever, it's sort of a non-factor on telling this kind of story, which is the same kind of story that we got to know her with. Mm-hmm. And I liked that because I think we as a group, you, myself, and former host of the show, Ron Richards, are having a complex relationship with the idea of nostalgia.
Okay. And
I think anybody heavily involved in sort of this comic book space like we are, or even pop culture to a certain extent, who's being thoughtful about it, is going to have various thoughts on the value of something that is nostalgia, which is just sort of going back to the well on something or showing you something that you used to like or bringing it back or returning, because so much of pop culture is now based upon that. And a lot of times it can feel like a thing that, like, for me, I feel like we already did this and it worked. Stop trying to recapture that feeling and give me something else. But occasionally, and we're going to talk about this again today, you know, there will be something that does hit you in the right way. And you're like, I really did like this thing. And this has the same quality of that thing that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this reading this book, it transported me back to an earlier time, which was certainly simpler as a comic book reader.
Yeah.
You know, for us, which was a nice feeling and a sort of, oh, right, look how far, both in a good way and a bad way, look how far that we've come. Look how far Bendis has come. Look how far King Jessica Jones has come. And at one point she swears in this book. She says shit. And I was like, oh, my God, is that okay? And like went back and looked at the cover, because the idea was that Jessica Jones was like the sweary book and it was the Max book. And that was the deal. Whereas this is, I don't know, just Marvel. Parental advisory, not for kids. That's what's on the front. That's the only thing there. You know, this is one of the reasons why we got rid of the Comics Code Authority. Like, do people even know what that is anymore? Like, is that?
I don't know.
And it was, you know, like it felt like it looked. And it was, Bendis did a lot of things. And I've always kind of liked his style, you know, but when he does the thing that made me a fan, it feels right, you know, and sometimes that feels like going back to the well and sometimes it doesn't. And in this instance, it really worked for me. So basically what you've got is this story where this overly wrought cowboy girl who is ridiculous. And I think it's known she's ridiculous. She has a purple hat and a pink jacket and a ridiculously written accent comes in and says that she's in love with the super villain, super in quotes, Armadillo. And she thinks there's something wrong with him and she needs Jessica to get him to come home. That's the whole thing. And so Jessica has to track him down. She goes to all the other superheroes. I think a highlight of this was she goes to Miles Morales and has a conversation with him because he'd had a run-in. He doesn't really tell her anything. And again, that's Bendis writing Miles Morales. That's, you know, there's not going to be a lot of that left. Goes to the Thing. Also, Bendis writes a great Thing. Did he never do Fantastic Four?
No.
Do you know how stupid that is?
Yeah, he should have done Fantastic Four.
He should have been doing Fantastic Four instead of Avengers the whole time. At least now. I mean, I know he didn't have a family then, but, you know, like, he would have been great at that. And, like, his voice really does fit Ben Grimm, you know. You know, she calls, there's a great, like, then she calls Luke Cage and he brushes her off. He is currently in the jaws of a Tyrannosaurus Rex, so there is some precedent for that.
He's a little busy.
Yeah, that's what he says, but he still hangs up on his wife. And I was like, oof, dude. you know, so she finds the armadillo. They have a conversation. There's a great ending to that where, like, she gets punched through a wall. You know, and that's the story. It's super simple. It's one day. It was over very fast. And I found it really satisfying. And it if I'm comparing it to the other books that I read, what tickled my feel good comic book sensors, it was this one, and that's why it ended up as the pick.
Well, you know, it's a very easy device, but I fell for it in the Bendis goodbye tour, even though this isn't his final issue, although it felt like it should have been.
Iron
Man 600 is, but you know, he goes through all his main characters. You know, uh-huh. He's Miles Morales, Peter Parker, Luke Cage, the Thing, who he wrote in Infamous Iron Man. So he gets sort of a goodbye tour with all of his recent main characters one last time, even if it's just a couple of pages. And it was satisfying. It just was satisfying. And also, if he wasn't setting this up, then he got really lucky, because all of these characters did have interactions with the Armadillo in the other books. Mm-hmm. And, you know, reports, gossip sources say this was not a long planned departure for Marvel. He got really lucky that he could just say, oh, all these characters fought the Armadillo in the last couple of years, so I'll make that my device, because it worked. They all did. Who knows why, but it was a nice goodbye.
It was nice. It was just nice. And when I was sort of looking at the other books, there were some books that were good or bad or interesting or whatever. But I was like, that was nice. It made me feel good.
I like the idea of a pop-up supervillain, like, Flophouse.
Yeah. And I was like, why are they letting her in there? But I also like that she lives on the fuzzy line. Like, see, that part probably would have worked better prior to her being, you know, Luke Cage, Mrs. Luke Cage and the Avenger and everything. I was like, they're not going to let her in there. But in the first book, they would have let her in there.
Yeah.
So I went with that. That's fine. Wasn't a problem. But also, yes, I like that idea. I like that it's cool. It's totally a thing that would exist.
Now, when you scroll to the end of this book, if you're on the iPad, it says Jessica Jones will return fall 2018.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I was like, aw.
Yeah, that's sticking it to Bendis. That's imminent, though.
Yeah. Who knows if that's an actual drawing from the book, from what they're doing, or who knows, or even if it's a joke or not. But
yep,
I feel like that this is a character they need to leave on the shelf for at least a little bit.
Who knows? Who knows now how it's going to work or whatever. Like, but again, my new thing is, if you're going to do it, you fucking do it. Go balls out. Go right. Make it stupid. Also, I love that costume, that Warbird costume. I really liked.
Yeah.
That was when I first met really like Carol Danvers as a character.
It's a great costume.
It's a great costume.
You had mentioned to me as I was talking about Jessica Jones, that Old Man Hawkeye number 3 was a front runner for pick of the week at the time. And I thought, well, have I read that? And I looked back, and Old Man Hawkeye number 1 was a patron pick, but I wasn't on that episode.
Oh, really?
And I couldn't remember if I had read it, you know, after, you know, even though not being on the episode, you know, just so I could listen. What I did was I got all 3 and I read them.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked them.
Yeah.
It's really good.
That was one of those patron picks that really worked out. And I probably would have read it anyway, I think. But this Ethan Sachs guy, I guess, is a journalist, sort of new to comic book writing, relatively speaking. So let's just talk about this issue. Basically, we're in Old Man Logan world. Everything is destroyed, and the world's been cut up into chunks, not unlike over in Rucka's book, Lazarus.
Yep.
Except everyone controlling it is either supervillains, or I think they're all supervillains, or maybe some superheroes are sort of villainous. Doesn't matter. And so Clint is on this journey to like do something that everybody tells him he shouldn't be doing. And in this issue, he goes to the circus. And he's talking to somebody named Eric, E-R-I-K, and I thought, is this supposed to be Magneto? Is he going to fight Magneto? And it turns out it's Atlas from Thunderbolts, and he came to repay, like, for what when they betrayed him, because must be 25 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Do you think it was that long? It was when we were in college.
Yeah.
Clint Barton became the leader. I'm almost tearing up talking about this. He became the leader of the Thunderbolts, which was a bunch of villains headed by Baron Zemo. And then Zemo was ousted and they decided they really wanted to be heroes. So Hawkeye took over the team. And it's one of my favorite Hawkeye stories. And then ultimately they turn on him and they all go back to being villains. And now 25 years later in this comic book, he goes back for revenge. And I was like, fuck yeah. Now, again, this is that nostalgia question. Like, it doesn't work for me until it works for me. And I was like, because this is deep comic book nerd shit. This is an unresolved storyline from, you know, at least 20 years ago. And I was eating it up with a spoon. I don't even remember the details, but I was like, oh my God, nobody's ever dealt with this. Which made me think immediately, oh, this writer is one of our people. Like, he would have come up through this. Because you're not reading these trades. You would have read them at the time.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the question is he getting revenge for that? Or is it for revenge for what happened to destroy the world?
I took it as, well, he basically... You know, Atlas says, I know we should have killed you that day, you know, and it seemed to me like it was about turning on him with the Thunderbolts.
You're more of an expert on that than I am.
By expert, it's a thing I vaguely remember from college. So that's how I chose to remember it.
Right. The only reason I ask is because in the second issue, maybe there's a lot of flashbacks to the day all the heroes got killed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if they were involved with that. It doesn't really matter.
It's still a callback to a thing that, you know, that is familiar to me. And they flash back to them being friends. There's one thing where basically Clint is standing over Atlas's face, and he's got the arrow knocked, you know, and there's one frame of them back in the Thunderbolts days, and then he lets go of the arrow and shoots him in the eye and kills him. And rough. I was like, that's grim. And then you've got bowler hat, mustache, bullseye.
Yeah.
Just stupid.
I mean, because it's everything I kind of want out of a comic book series. I mean, it's silly. It's a kind of a Western homage. Not kind of, it's a super Western homage. It calls back to, as you said earlier, incarnations, old scores being settled.
Well, it's a direct link that this Hawkeye is my Hawkeye.
Yeah.
This isn't Hawkeye.
No. Marco Cicchetto. He's terrific.
Yep.
I mean, I had a really good time reading these three issues.
Yeah, no, it's totally been that. And so, like, it's one of those things that it comes out and I see it, like, oh, sweet. You're like, because I forget about it. I don't think about it until it comes out. And then when it does, I get a little excited. And it's the one thing that I'm finding lately in comics is that there's a really fine line between serious and stupid. If you hit, we were talking about this with Donny Cates, like, it's funny and it takes itself seriously, but not quite, but also not to the other end of it knows it's silly. It's not winking at us. It's the Fast and the Furious line, the first one.
Like, and Red Skull's in it. You know, I don't get enough Red Skull in my life. And, you know, we should mention the main, you know, subplot is that Hawkeye's going blind.
Yeah, which I like. I like a lot better than Hawkeye going deaf, which was a thing.
So he's having trouble... Obviously, hitting things with his arrows, and he's in a race against time before he goes blind. And also, there's something else that's happening. Oh, that he's being hunted by Venom, who has merged with Madrox, the last multiple version of Madrox, and now there's multiple Venoms.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on here. It's super fun. I was really happy you mentioned it because I probably wouldn't have read it.
Yeah, great. So there we go. Two reciprocal recommendations from
the two books. Well, I figure I gave you one, and I was like, I couldn't remember if I'd read the first one, so I went back, and I was like, no.
Yeah, they're not tough reads. They're not wordy 40-page giants or anything.
Oh, no, they're fun. There was a bunch of long books this week.
Yes, there were. I was like, how long have I been reading? Oh, my God. So, I thought it was a light week. It was only 50-page books.
Yeah, if you recall... Javier Fernandez drew a lot of Nightwing, and I loved Javier Fernandez on Nightwing. He was terrific. Here he pops up in Detective Comics 977 alongside Eddie Barrows, who draws a future flash-forward part, but mostly it's Javier Fernandez. And he can, as far as I'm concerned, he can draw Batman characters all day long. He is really good at it. But here we're entering the story. At the end of last issue, Batwoman decided she was going to go with her father and join the team of government soldiers and agents who are going to want to bring Batman down after a rift in the family last time. And so here we flash forward a few years in which Tim is in college. he hasn't been Robin in a long time. And the government agents finally attack Wayne Manor and kill Batman. And so
is Fernandez the more cartoony storyline, like the first page?
No, that's Eddie Barrows.
Really?
It opens with the flash forward.
Okay. I'm not thinking about the first page.
Go to page 11. That's the first Javier Fernandez page. And so then we can flash back.
I kind of remember that as Nightwing.
Yeah, he did the Nightwing stuff. And then go back to Tim realizing he's been shown this future by this weird guy, Ulysses, who has downloaded the information from future. This is very comic booky and confusing. Future Tim Drake's suit. He had come back from the future before. And so he said, this is your future. You're going to be screwed. And so he's making it his mission to, Tim Drake is, to not let this happen, to get back with Batman, because they've had a rift. And I loved the way it looked. If Javier Fernandez's art was terrific, I love Tim and Batman together again, because that's a better Robin pairing than Batman and Damian. I loved this, the look and feel of this issue a lot. And I know that they're changing the creative team soon. James Tynion IV is leaving. This has really been his storyline, so we'll see how long it actually takes or if it has any consequences or not. But for now, I really enjoyed reading this particular issue.
Well, good. It's funny because this is one of those things that I stopped reading, and I don't think I regret that, but...
No, but this, I mean...
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. I just was like, I can't read everything.
This issue looks terrific.
Yeah, it does.
So Moon Knight.
Yeah, we finished up this arc, basically, of Moon Knight versus Ra, the sun god or whatever it is. And this was another patron pick.
Yeah.
I think we stuck with because of it.
We both enjoyed it.
Yeah, and I thought...
Moon Knight, 193, by the way.
193 or 6. I really like the Jason Burroughs art through this whole thing. He was the guy who was mostly known as an Avatar artist. I think he did stuff with Ennis and Warren Ellis over there. He has the goods. He's not on the next arc.
Not surprising.
According to the end of this, which sucks. I was like, because that makes me less likely to want to keep reading it. However... Ty Templeton is the artist on the next arc.
Ty Templeton's... I had the same thought. I was like, oh, and then I thought, well, Ty Templeton's... He's really good. It's a different style. It's a very different style.
Yeah.
It's he was big in the 90s doing the cartoon style, the Batman the Animated Series style. He did Keith Giffen's Justice League for a while. Like, he's an old hand. He's a veteran, and he's just a very different look than Burroughs is. I like him a lot, so that made me interested to keep going. And also Becky Cloonan covers, which I don't know if that's signaling like a total shift in the tone of the book.
Well, presumably it's the same writer, this Max Bemis.
Right.
I mostly liked this story a lot. I don't know that I loved the ending. I don't know that I liked the reveal that they had the power of crazy. But yeah. It's kind of funny. And then he basically becomes leader of the cult, because when you do something cool around a bunch of cultists, they're all like, okay, you're the guy now.
We follow you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked this six-issue arc. I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept going with it, so that tells me something.
I really liked parts of it. You know, it's one of those things where, like, adding a daughter or a kid to something can be... problematic. Sometimes it works, it doesn't. Yeah, I actually thought it worked here. I mean, like the idea that he had been the father to this girl without knowing it, not even like got somebody pregnant, but literally had shown up and been a father to her in one of his other personalities, I think is really interesting. I was like, okay, that's a way to do this that I hadn't thought of that, you know, is interesting.
He got fucked up, Mark, here.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of his thing.
But if you get your scalp burned like that, I don't think hair grows back.
He's very handsome. It's too bad. You're right.
But it doesn't matter. It's comics. The cover, the next issue cover, it's really good.
Nothing makes sense. Nothing matters.
So I'm glad the Patriots had picked this originally. I did enjoy reading it. I will continue reading it for at least for one more issue to see what the deal is with the next arc and what Ty Templeton brings to the table.
I'm going to be looking out for Jason Burroughs.
Yes. The artistic wheel spins.
So let me ask you this.
Yes.
Do you feel like the Doomsday Clock event is supposed to be a bigger deal than it is?
Yes. I think two unfortunate things are happening. One, it's been delayed, not unsurprisingly, when you have Gary Frank doing it, and it's oversized each issue.
Yeah.
And two, Metal was so delayed, I'm going to talk about Metal 6 in a minute, that it overlapped. Mm-hmm. And so you had two overlapping, quote unquote, events happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of the thing. Is like, I don't know what is, I mean, maybe there should be room in my life for more events, but I feel like if a publisher really wants to get their juice out of it, then, you know, like they need to do one at a time and make this be the big thing.
But also, and this is spoiling a little bit of the Metal discussion, no one knows what to make of either of these things.
Well, okay, let's table that in terms of Metal and get back to it. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm not confused by this at all. I think it's actually very strong quality storytelling. It is what it's supposed to be. It's an excellent impersonation of a thing.
Mm-hmm. It's a cover band.
Yeah, and it's a cover band with really good musicians who should be playing something else.
Right.
I mean, I hate to say, like, this is, I mean, what an amazing, like, bit of skill that you're seeing from Geoff Johns and Gary Frank here. Why are they doing something they've done before that's been done before?
I don't know. And I think the confusing isn't the issue-to-issue storytelling. No. It is the what is happening.
What here. Is this?
What is this? What is Bird Notice? Because we've been told that this is all pointing to this. You know, it was revealed that Dr. Manhattan caused the New 52 to happen. You know, we had Flash come back or Wally West come back, and it's all been leading to this moment in which you would assume all of the last 6 years would be it'd be culminating to this moment and be dealt with in some way, some fashion. But right now, we're just kind of hanging out in the Watchmen timeline, and I get the pacing is deliberate because the pacing of Watchmen is deliberate, but when you have a lot to deal with, so presumably, if this is in fact going to be the thing that deals one way or another with the New 52, then I feel like you need to get a move on a little bit.
That's kind of what it feels like. If this is important, like, I don't know how long ago, I don't remember how long ago it was that we first sort of got that glimpse of Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, and in Reborn?
Rebirth. That feels like forever ago. So any significance, that was so subtle that any significance about it seems, or in the Batman Flash thing.
The button.
The button, there you go. And it's like, once you start that clock, that doomsday clock, like you got to get on with it or it's going to not seem relevant. Just because, I mean, literally part of the reason is the comics themselves are coming out every 2 weeks. Like, story is moving faster than ever. And so while I am all about quality consistency and you know, having the same artist on everything and have them do a good time, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, the subtlety of the rollout.
Yeah.
The scheduling has been troublesome because it has been so subtle, and you can't tease this big thing and then not really deal with it.
And then
have other things happen. I told this to Scott Snyder at Comic-Con last year. He asked me what people were thinking about Metal. And I said, people are really preoccupied with the Doomsday Clock, or, you know, Dr. Manhattan, because this was right after, right after the button. I said, everyone, DC readers, for the most part, tend to assume anything big is going to have to do with Dr. Manhattan. And he was like, well, it has nothing to do with that. I said, that's totally cool. It's just that that's the preoccupation right now because of the way DC has been handling it.
If we're timing the things the way that we used to in comic books, that game's over, man. That we are getting an onslaught of content at every second. Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not like this now. All the Netflix shows, all the whatever, and like literally, you're throwing comic books at us twice as fast as we used to. So a 2 month cycle is really like a 4 month cycle now, and that's if you can even keep up.
And they have already announced that this is going to have further delays in it. Mm-hmm. And so, I think the anxiety for some people is, I don't know if this is actually going to do. Like, is this actually going to deal with all that stuff? Is nothing going to be different afterwards? I mean, I know that's the joke we make, but like, you can't point to this one guy messed up the DC universe. He took away our years. He made us younger. Like that whole Wally West speech that he mm-hmm. made, and then not have it pay off.
The anxiety is we've
dealt with that not at all in the first four issues, and this is one third of the story.
Well, I would trust Geoff Johns to have that not be the case.
Sure, but I think
it's more about. I think it's more about that when it does happen, is anyone going to care anymore?
That's what I mean. Without that, dealing with those parts of the story, you're not hearing a lot of talk about it because this entire issue was the origin of the new Rorschach. Don't necessarily care.
Yeah, I actually kind of liked it more when I thought now. I thought it was the kid reading the comic book before, and now it's the son of the therapist who went mm-hmm. crazy dealing with Rorschach.
Yeah.
And I liked it a lot better an issue ago where they were just hinting at it being that kid who was reading the pirate book.
I don't know if they actually hinted at it or we did that ourselves. Which
maybe.
Would have been that.
But either way, if they had just left it like that, that would have been, I think, a lot more interesting than what they did do with it. And it's not that this doesn't make sense. I was like, oh, okay, that's what we're going to go. But yeah, they're explaining a thing. But I don't know that that's not in the... This all feels like Watchmen.
No, it's I enjoy reading them. Yeah. Like anytime I get to see Gary Frank draw, and Geoff Johns is doing a good job. And I think the impersonation of Moore is better now than the first issue, which I thought didn't work at all. Mm-hmm. The impersonation didn't work at all, not the issue. When it comes out, I'm like, oh, ooh, Watchmen, the Doomsday Clock, that's fun. But
it is interesting.
At the end of it, I'm like, well. I mean, okay. That's basically my reaction to the end.
I mean, it's like watching Gus Van Sant's Psycho. Again, a very dated reference. But, you know, you're like, well, that's kind of interesting, and it was well done, but why? Which is, by the way, exactly the same thing I felt watching the Watchmen movie.
And I think that the feeling would be different if they were actually interacting with the DCU. Right? Because this issue is basically 90%. In the Watchmen universe, and it's really hard to tell when it is and isn't. That was what my one criticism is if it flashes back and forth between him in a mental institution in the Watchmen universe, and then him in, I guess, Arkham in the DCU. But it was hard to tell when which was which, and when he was being beat up in prison, I thought that he was back in the old. Like, it was that's the only thing I have a criticism for the book is I didn't know which was which. Anyway. This is going to be – the schedule is going to be a problem for this. And you're right. I didn't even think of the fact that we're so used to getting four of these chapters a month or whatever. Then getting one every 3 months is going to be a real hard thing to deal with.
I mean, I just can't – there's just so much content. It's hard, it's like if you want something to be relevant, you need to either blow me away or hurry the fuck up.
And this is their own doing.
Sure.
They do this to themselves by putting the books out twice a month. Mm-hmm. And or in the case of Avengers, every week.
I agree. So let us move along to us. Let's talk about us. If you want to like this show, you like what we do, and you want to be part of it, you can go to patreon.com/ifanboy. This helps support the show. This makes it... helps it worth doing. It basically is a way for you to show that you want to support the things that you like, just the same way that we think you should do with all of the stuff that you like, because our new entertainment economy has shifted. I don't know if you've noticed that. Our next stretch goal is a non-comics media podcast, which I really think that we could hit out of the park, if I'm going to be completely honest with you. I think people really like that. They like it when we do it in the hangouts. They like it when we do the year-end show. There should be more of that. And so if you've been thinking about getting on the bus, this would be a really good time because I would like to do that. So get over to patreon.com/ifanboy to do that and support the show directly. Of course, if you don't want to do Patreon for some reason, there's still a direct donation via PayPal if that's a thing that you want to do over at ifanboy.com/support. This stuff totally makes a difference in our lives and is really helpful and is a great motivation for us to always sort of keep going and make sure we're keeping it good and keeping it fresh rather than just sort of a hobby that we do on the side. So we take it really seriously. Although I don't know if we know how to not do that, to be honest with you. Another way to be part of the whole deal is get over to our t-shirt store at ifanboy.threadless.com. There are now 6 designs in the show. Some of you did pony up and come get the GDAT shirt, goddamn American treasure. With an unnamed celebrity's head there.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't either. I don't know what that's about. And I feel like we should probably sell that more, but I also like the fact that we've just sucked at promoting that in any way that's understandable to anybody who doesn't know the joke.
That's okay. Sometimes it's just for us.
That's fine. I love that shirt, though. And I like the If One Is Electro shirt. I like all the shirts. The good shirt. Guess what's coming, though?
Yeah, you said we had 6 designs. Technically, we have 7. We just haven't released it yet. We did finalize the new shirt design actually today as we record. We'll be promoting it. We'll be releasing it to the patrons in a hangout this month. And then it'll be available probably by the end of the month. But it's a good shirt. It's a strong design. One of my favorites. And I think people are going to like it. So it'll be coming out probably in April.
It's going to be good. You're going to want this one.
So check it out.
ifanboy.threadless.com. Definitely. We're back to bats again. So go ahead.
Oh, Batgirl. Batgirl number 21. I wanted to mention it because it was a nice little one-shot team-up between Batgirl and her dad. It was sweet. They were both in the same case. They decided to team up. And it was nice. I'm always really happy when it's just a one-issue story. And I realize a lot of modern comic writers don't have that muscle. They're they've come up on the 6-issue arc. They've also come up at a time when it's 20 pages instead of 22. And so it's difficult. But this was a really well done story by Hope Larson and Scott Godlewski on art, in which a cosmetics company with their dubious use of chemicals caused a sludge monster to pop out of the drains of people's bathrooms and put them in comas, and Batgirl and Gordon are on the case together, and it's fun. And at the end, they have a nice little dinner at a diner because he's been thinking about her because she's also Batgirl.
The art. Just I was looking at the issue.
Yeah, sweet little Father Knows Best team up.
Do you remember what Scott Godlewski drew? Something that we read recently and that we liked.
Did he?
I think so. I've seen that name around, and I was like, that's pretty nice art. Again, that's like a style I really
don't
dig.
Don't spring those questions on me.
I'm not. Well, you actually you remember things. You don't. Yeah,
I've been awake for 25 minutes.
That's not my fault. You're not the same as you used to be. You used to not get up early. Over at Hellblazer number 20, I don't know if anybody else here is like, oh, thank God he's going to talk about Hellblazer again. But I feel like, for the few people who care, this is a thing I'm known for, and I need to do my job. This is Tim Seeley, who is a good writer, and he's actually the right fit for the kind of tone this is. But man, instantly, like right away, I was like, I didn't look at who was writing it, but 2 pages in, I was like, whoever's writing this isn't British.
It's funny, isn't it? I mean, because there are other instances in which Americans write Brits or vice versa, and it's not as... And I don't read this, but I know from reading in the past, it's not as apparent. But for some reason with Hellblazer, I don't know if it's the specific accent that they try to write, but it seems to be, for the most part, it's glaring like a neon sign that it's not a Brit writing.
People constantly do – when Americans write him, it leans towards a Cockney accent, and it's not that. He's a Scouser. He's from Liverpool. He's got his own voice, and he's been written by Brits for so long in such a specific way because they know exactly what it is. And I think that I can't do it, but I recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, the story's okay. However, at the end of the last issue and in this one, we have Huntress show up, And I'm like, and for a long time, 18 issues, I was like, all right, we're back to Hellblazer. I don't have to worry. No, fuck, there's the DC universe again. and Huntress is a character like I can't get my head around.
Like, and also DC can't get their head around her either. She's one of those New 52 casualties in which she's been bouncing all over the place. She's a secret agent in the Grayson book. She's sort of more traditional in the Birds of Prey book, but still doesn't feel like
avenging Christian. Yeah. It's weird.
It doesn't feel like Tim Seeley wrote her in. He wrote with Tom King, the co-writer of Grayson, and she was one of the supporting cast there. So he wrote a lot of her there, but I didn't really like that version of her. So it's not surprising she showed up, but it's also kind of,
Yeah. It's funny because there's other British characters in here and they're all basically like South London kind of accents, and that's fine. It sounds like they do on TV or whatever. But Constantine himself is just, I'm like, it's not right. So in this case, I believe that you either need to get somebody who's really, really good or you need a Brit. It's just the way it is. Over to Daredevil number 600. You put this on the list, I think.
I did put it on the list. Daredevil 600. I figured we should talk about it. Charles Soule, Ron Garney, and this was one of the slightly oversized issues that we read this week. One of many. And it was a nice culmination of this particular storyline, which I was back and forth on whether I liked or not. I like the character of Muse. I don't care about Blindspot. So their big epic battle didn't really do anything for me, but I like the whole Wilson Fisk mayor scenario, and it ended up in a place I did not expect, which is good. And I like the Garniard a lot.
Yeah. I think I'm kind of where you are. Like, I like the idea of it. I like parts of it. I don't love the whole thing, but it, at least it's interesting.
Yeah. And the idea that it ends with Daredevil in shackles in the back of a paddy wagon. Racist. And but meanwhile he's being declared the new mayor of New York because he's the deputy mayor, and there's a complicated line of succession thing that happened. It was interesting. Now what's gonna happen now? The mayor's in prison, but they don't know it. So
it's very comic book.
Totally.
Very superhero comic book, like 70s Marvel.
Yes. Next and week. Also you're right. It's a great cliffhanger, one of those kind of 70s cliffhangers. But also the Garney art was terrific, and it was fun to see him draw the team of sort of New York heroes that go up against the Kingpin. So you got the Defenders, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and Iron Fist, and you have Spider-Man, and you got Moon Knight and Blade, and somebody else is.
Weren't
there
a lot more people in the last one?
I feel like there were. Maybe people were like, "Fuck this."
Because I was like, oh, good, I'm going to finally figure out why they have Echo and Ronan. And then I was like, oh, they fixed that problem. But I don't remember if that was this book or that was Defenders.
I don't remember. But you have the full Defenders team, Daredevil, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, Jessica Jones. You got Echo, you got Misty Knight, Spider-Man, and Moon Knight. And it's, it's a fun grouping. And Ron Garney really draws everyone really well.
Mm-hmm. I like that foreshortened leg on Daredevil. I always love that. That's hard.
So that was fun. I really enjoyed this issue. And I've been liking Daredevil.
Cool. Real quick, I picked up Johnny Blaze Ghost Rider from the Damnation series. I think it's just a one-shot. It doesn't even have a number associated with it. And I was surprised that Christopher Sabella, perfectly fine writer who I've heard of, but I'm not super familiar with, but can write a comic book. And Phil Noto on art. Which was kind of surprising.
That's exciting.
It is, and also it was a very. It wasn't. It's once I knew it was Phil Noto, I was like, "Oh, that's Phil Noto." But it was definitely like a little bit of a different Phil Noto. I thought we've talked about this.
His style has been evolving throughout the years.
Yeah, in a good way. Like it shows range, and it was a little less photographic, and even the sort of the colors that he did. I guess we sort of caught a glimpse of this. He did that Chewbacca series in the last year or so. It's fun. I'm not a huge Ghostbuster fan.
Ghostbuster.
Ghost Rider.
I have to credit, not credit you, but I have to fix what you said. There's a giant number one in the cover.
Okay.
Right under his name.
That's fine. That's totally fine. I don't know why.
I mean, it still could be a one-shot, but there's a giant number one on the cover.
There is. That's absolutely correct. But if you look in the app, let's see. No, it says number one. I'm not good at things.
I'm looking at the preview pages though, and this is it's a much more dynamic Phil Noto.
It is. It's like a cartoony, and I don't mean cartoony as in like it looks like a cartoon. I mean it's like a cartoonist kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It was really like it was surprising, and I thought, well, did somebody else ink and color this? Nope. No, he did it on his own. So I liked that. That was like a nice surprise. I'm not a giant Ghost Rider fan, but these stories are fun, and I had fun reading it. So there was that.
That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do the patron pick. Josh mentioned earlier patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and support the show. But also, if you do that and you support the show at any level, no matter what, you get to vote every week on the patron pick. That's when the patrons vote on Wednesdays and Thursdays to add a book to the rundown. This week, it was a blowout. Dark Knight's Metal number 6 won by like 15 votes.
Why do you think that is?
Because
I'm trying to figure out if they want to hear us talk about something that will be interesting or they're just spiteful. And I suspect...
Well, I think it's a combination of it's the final issue of an event. And we have talked about this will be 4 out of the 6 issues, we hadn't talked about 4 and 5. So it had been a long time. And with the delay, mm-hmm. it seemed even longer since we last talked about it. There was a perception I saw on the chat that we hadn't been talking about the book at all. So I think people wanted to hear what...
Which, by the way,
was all about.
That completely backs up what we were just saying about Watchmen.
Yeah.
If it happened 2 months ago, it may as well not have happened. Unless it happened 30 years ago in a Star Wars movie, and then it's like the fucking Bible.
You hadn't been reading this. You dropped off.
It's funny because I didn't notice there being a change because I dropped off after whatever the last one we talked about where I was like, I'm good, guys. Thanks. Have fun.
Yeah, I think the last one we talked about was 3-4. I think we talked about 1. I wrote it down at work.
I think Ron was on the show, so it was at least that long ago.
Yeah. So this is the final issue. This is a 50-page behemoth. And I don't know what to say. I
have one question just from a completely – and we just recognize that I can't find things that are right in front of my face. Is there a credits page in this anywhere?
I can't scroll through 50 pages live.
I did but 3 times last night because I think that's Mikkel Janin or Janin.
Yes, at the end. Janin at the end. Yes.
But it's not written anywhere.
Yeah.
There's no credits page in this book.
That's happened a couple of times lately. And is he on the cover even?
No.
Yeah, I was surprised to see him. Yeah, you're right. The cover says Snyder, Capullo, Glapion, and Placencia. It doesn't say Mikkel Janin anywhere.
And I flipped through it a bunch of times trying to find the credits page. I know that's not a thing for people, but I have to find out what the credits are. And that bugged me. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry. Stupid.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of problems. You know, this was so delayed that the books, that recent line of books that we mostly eschewed came out, which all was born from the end of this story. You know, the Terrifics and... The Silencers and all those other books that we're not reading, Damage.
I tried to read Terrifics.
Came out of this story. And so that's a publishing problem. I feel really, Snyder, Capullo are one of my favorite Batman teams. You know, I'd put them up there with, Grant and Breyfogel and Paro and all those, I put them up in that, that top echelon. Yeah, I think their 10-volume run was really terrific. Mm-hmm. I don't know that this worked. I feel like they were trying to do Morrison, and it just didn't work.
I know that it didn't work in one case, and that would be mine. It's not even that I didn't like it. I didn't get it at all. I wasn't interested in it. Eventually I just didn't want to read it. A lot of that had to do with sort of the basic design. I don't feel like it was consistent. Like, it was consistent with the idea of the title that is This Is Metal. And that's about as far as it went for me.
That's the final line.
The story, like at the end, basically because I skipped a couple of issues, but also I didn't feel like I'd missed anything because it didn't make any more sense to me when I got to this point. But a lot of that had to do with the fact that I don't care. I understand that I didn't care. When I mean, it's not saying I don't care, like I'm blowing it off, like I wasn't made to care. And so I get the idea that there are these kinds of metals. They have always existed. There's the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th metal, and the nth metal, and they have powers, and they've always been there. This is the spider totem or the whatever thing. You
I
know,
think the nth metal is the 9th metal.
Whatever.
Doesn't matter.
You know, like the idea that it's there, but like as I read through this, there's the I don't know if this was supposed to be Plastic Man's big moment, but that yeah. felt lacking. I wanted that to be a big thing, and it was kind of cool, and then it was over, and then we instantly switch over. Then they find Carter Hall is in the ground. Carter Hall is an enigma among enigmas, and it's never made sense to me, and I get it. I get the basics of it, but it's really tough to make work. So then you have Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman come out in this, whatever the 10th metal is, the shiny stuff that is the foundation of all metal. And then we go over to a different group of Batmans, and one of them seems like the normal Batman, and then he's fighting the villain in this. Which
the Joe, the Batman who laughs, yeah.
Yeah. I hate that design. I really don't like it. Like it.
Which one?
The one with the spikes on his eyes.
Oh, the Batman who laughs.
It just, okay. It feels, is that maybe that's what it is. Like, it just feels like a Korn video from when we were in college.
Like it's metal.
I know, but like,
I don't care for it either.
It didn't fit for me. Like it's not a, it, I don't want to say it's not a bad design because it is what it is. And it definitely evokes a feeling, but it was like, oh, that's not for me.
Yeah. You know what? Now that you say it, I don't understand how Batman is in two places at once. He's fighting.
I just figured there were two different Batmans and I didn't understand.
There's a lot of Batmans running around, but I thought the guy that was in the 10th metal was like the real Batman, but yeah. Also so was the one fighting the Batman who laughs alongside the Joker.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I felt like I was barely holding on by my fingertips throughout this entire series. And I don't like, you mentioned it in passing.
I talked a lot, I'm sorry.
The spider totem-esque-ness of it. I don't really ever really like that in comics where it's like everything is preordained and there's a mystical reason for everything as opposed to things just happening.
And it's been here all along, you just didn't know about it. It's the Sentry.
People make choices. It takes away the choice of people. So I never really liked that bit of it. The last thing I need is more mystical Carter Hall. Didn't hate this so much as I was just completely baffled and bewildered.
Yeah,
by it.
I didn't hate it. I wasn't like I just was like, well, I don't know if this is good, but I know it's not for me.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like reading it all in one sitting to see if it tracks, but I also don't know if I can't do that. I feel really bad because you know the idea of Snyder and Capullo doing a DC event was super exciting, and then it just didn't work for me, which is a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, but that's a lot of stuff they went through to do one that was like, all right, that was ambitious, but I don't know that it worked. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a bad. I didn't want it to come across as like, oh, this sucked. It's like, no, I don't mind that. That's a thing that happens. We talked about this with Morrison a lot. Was like,
yeah, I mean, take a big swing, and I really did feel like they were trying. It had a lot of heavy sort of Morrison-esque elements, and you know, the metal that makes the metal, and that kind of that feels very Morrison.
So. Kind of thing, but. Let me say something good.
Yeah.
I like is a strong word. I was intrigued by the end bit.
Okay, so the end in the epilogue, there's a big state dinner at Wayne Manor with all the Justice League.
Apparently Alfred makes everybody fitted formal wear.
He's the best.
Yeah, I know.
See what he can do with two hands?
No.
When the man's got two hands. He can do anything.
Hold on. Well, let's get to it.
Yeah.
The speech and everything is fine, and I liked how I liked Janine's art a lot, and so I liked looking at that whole part. We turn a page at one point, and Batman is hosting a rock band party for everybody, and they're dancing, and fucking Alfred is on drums.
Yeah, see,
what the fuck was this? Why is the Swamp Thing why is the Swamp Thing in a bow tie? Detective Chimp is there. This is so stupid that I liked it, but only because it was stupid. I'm just talking about this one page.
No, I get it. I kind of feel like, you know, Capullo is a well-known metalhead.
I know, but he didn't draw this part.
I know, but I'm saying the whole reason for this series to be in sure. being, to exist, you know, Snyder is a huge Elvis fan, but also seems to like metal.
I feel like Snyder was like the guy, like, you remember in that episode of Freaks and Geeks where James Franco decides he's going to be a punk for a night?
I don't remember, though.
Well, You should. It was very good. Like, he goes in to do the thing, and he's like, I'm going to be in the punk thing. And, like, I feel like Snyder is, like, trying to do the metal stuff and, like, match Capullo's style with it. And it, I think it didn't.
My point is, I feel like this entire – I don't want to say this entire thing was a joke, because that's – it was more like, let's do a metal sensibility story in the DCU, even mm-hmm. if it doesn't make sense. You know, the idea that Batman's going to be hosting a metal concert in the manor – doesn't make any sense.
I could look at this two-page spread all day, though. I love that somebody stitched Fair Play on the back of Mr. Terrific's tux jacket.
So, I like Michael Janin a lot. Mm-hmm. However, there's one shot, it's page 38 on your iPads, when they're all standing around the table before they sit down, and they're all, like, half of them are doing the Superman pose.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it was just like, why are they all standing with their...
Maybe he doesn't know how to draw people standing.
Hands on their hips. And why are they smiling like lunatic? They have these creepy, like, Stepford Wives smiles.
You're not wrong.
So I was like, what is happening in this book? That was more...
They're all crotch forward.
Well, you know, it's the best way. It's the center of gravity.
Does Cyborg not have a neck anymore?
I don't know. Apparently not.
And then you got...
So this is the new Justice League team that's going to go forward from the book that Snyder's writing.
Right.
Which is fine. It's a good team. But I'm actually that's not even accurate because John Stewart's on the team and not Hal Jordan. Hmm. So, but this is almost the team going forward.
Nothing makes sense. Nothing matters. Remember, kids, what happens at a Batman party stays at a Batman party.
That's what I feel like. I was like, I finished this, like, were they just fucking with us this whole time?
I mean, I like that as an ethos. Although, I gotta say, that's a little more punk rock than it is metal, if I'm gonna be completely honest. Right. Alfred's on drums. He's got a double bass there, I notice. There's no bass player in this band, by the way. It's two guitar players. Who are these people?
In the crowd?
Yeah.
I just closed it. Hold on. Where did it go?
Everybody looks the same. Everybody looks vaguely Asian or blonde. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, at least they're not standing with their hands on their hips. So let's see the crowd shot. All right. Open up. So we have Swamp Thing and Detective Chimp, obviously. Then you have Dr. Fate and Mr. Terrific. Those are the people all the way on the right-hand side. Then you have Oliver Queen dancing with Black Canary. Who's
got the metal collar things.
Yep. And then you have
Hal Jordan.
Donna Troy dancing with Roy Harper.
Oh, wow.
And then you have Dick and Barbara doing a little flirty thing on the dance floor.
Yeah.
That would be Garth with the facial hair behind Roy Harper. I would assume Wally behind next to him.
Okay. You're good. But Barbara.
And then I don't know who these other three people are at the front.
Is that not Barbara Gordon?
Barbara's got the yellow on her yellow bat on her dress that she's talking to Grace.
Oh, so who's the other redhead?
I don't know who that is.
Is that Kane?
No, because she's been ousted. She's anti-Batman.
Oh, man.
These could be other Teen Titans who they try to make me feel like are founding members but aren't, but I don't know who they are.
Okay. And are we supposed to know who the band is other than Alfred? Who are the twins? Oh, is that? That's not.
Is the Wonder Twins?
That's not Damien, is it?
Oh. Is it Damien and Jonathan?
I hope not. That would be stupid. My completely objective ruling of stupid. And sometimes stupid is good and sometimes it's bad. I don't know.
I think the important thing to note is we've gone so long in this, we don't have any time for emails.
I think it was worth it. I mean, this is their fault.
Let's do ratings.
Ratings. I don't feel qualified for this.
It's really hard. I mean, just this one particular issue. So we're not rating the whole series.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't dislike it. I just felt like I was completely bewildered by it. I thought it looked good. I've always liked the Capullo art, even if it's a little sketchier than his normal style. I'm going to say 3 out of 5.
2.
And obviously sticking. Are you going to stick with the...
No.
Well, there's a before the Justice League series that Snyder's writing, there's going to be a miniseries that'll probably deal with the Hal question, but... You're going to read that Snyder's writing. Featuring art by Francis Manapal and a couple other people who are very good.
I mean, that does sound like a thing that I should read. I mean, I think if we get out of this, the metal,
yeah,
then it might be okay.
No justice.
What's the movie with Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin? Like Midnight Run?
Midnight Run, come on.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry. There's this one scene in there where Charles Grodin makes like a very guttural grunt. It's my favorite thing that he's ever done before. And that was my moment there.
So it's written by Snyder, Tinian, and Josh Williamson.
Huh. All of them?
I guess.
All right.
It starts in May.
No justice, no peace.
All right. So sticking with that, I'm going to read that, yes.
I will probably read it unless I hate everything that week.
So let's do patron powers. As we mentioned before, patreon.com/fanboy. That's where you can vote in the patron pick. You can support the show. But also, if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower. And we thank you for doing that. Clark Doherty is our first patron. Clark's power in honor of opening weekend and baseball. Clark can transform into Wee Willie Keeler.
Go on.
That's all. He just transforms into Wee Willie Keeler.
Who is that?
He was like turn of the century. He played for a lot of people. He played for the Giants. He played for the Orioles. He played for the Highlanders before they were the Yankees. He played for the Brooklyn Superbuzz, the Brooklyn Grooms. And for a while, Wee Willie Keeler had the consecutive game hitting streak that Joe DiMaggio broke.
Okay.
He was only 5'4" and weighed 140 pounds.
He's Wee. Uh-huh.
Brooklynite. Born in Brooklyn, died in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
So right, he can turn to Wee Willie Keeler. He's a little compact baseball player, turn of the century.
Did you finish up your Ken Burns rewatch?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why I don't remember that. Now I feel like I need to watch it again.
That's all right.
I got four and a half seasons of ER left. I like to get the tunnel.
His quote was, "Hit him where they ain't."
I mean, it's exactly correct.
Listen, if you could turn into any baseball player, there's worse ones. He had a .385 career batting average.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
I mean,
there are definitely worse ones who you could be.
I'm sorry, sure. He had a .340 career average. He had at one point a .385 career batting average.
That's pretty good. He stuck around a little while when he was in the decline, brought his average down.
Well, .340 is still pretty good.
It's not bad. That's, I mean, career wise, that's got to be better than a lot of the Hall of Famers.
Yeah, and so that, you know, he transforms into, and the thing is, here's the twist: he's black and white when he turns into Wee Willie Keeler.
What do they call that when you save the game in the ninth inning? Which is what you just did. You're like, hold on, I've got it. It took Connor 5 minutes to make me laugh with this baseball shit, but he got there.
That's all that matters.
That's that stick-to-itiveness that we want to see in a player. Ryan Davis has the unique ability to be able to objectively quantify the value of art on a scale of 1 to 100.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. He can like, every time you're like, well, it's subjective, it's not whatever. No, he can look at any piece of art. I'm going to go with visual art just because it gets specious after that. And he'd be like, that is a 75% effective quality piece of art.
So like 75 out of 100.
Yeah. And it's right. He's not like people look like, yeah, I guess that's right. You can't, you know, you can't argue with it, but there is.
Yeah, they say, oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah,
it turns out there is an objective value to visual art.
But only Ryan Davis knows it.
He knows it exactly. And it would hold up to any scrutiny. Can you, as we struggle to try to give a rating of 1 to 5 to a comic book on a weekly
Jimmy
basis.
Jimmy Dunn, who sounds like an old-time baseball player, actually. I should have given him the weekly killer power. Jimmy Dunn can shoot banana peels.
Uh-huh.
From his hands.
Really?
Yeah.
Just the peels?
Just the peels. People can slip on them.
Thank God you explained that part. Does he have a sidekick who would say, Jimmy, give him the slip?
You ain't giving Jimmy the slip.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's okay. That's what he does. So if people are trying to run away, he can stop them.
You couldn't even get the sentence out. This next one is hit the deck officer. This is when you're supposed to repeat deck officer.
Deck officer.
There you go.
Yeah, sometimes when you sign up for Patreon, your whatever silly name you use goes in the list. So that's your hit the deck officer.
Well, if you listen to the Star Wars Minute podcast, they do a thing at the end of their exclusive weekend edition show where they do the quote unquote roll call of heroes, where they read off the names of everybody who is a patron supporter every week. It takes well over an hour. Jeez. I've been like, I'll sit through that, sure. And then like 45 minutes in, I was like, I have to go. I can't. But their people will have names like this. I suspect that hit the deck officer
is also a Star Wars.
I'm sorry. When someone says deck officer, you have to repeat deck officer slightly
deck
more.
Deck officer.
Thank you. I suspect that he's also a Star Wars Minute patron.
What's his power?
Oh, his power is that he's always simultaneously broadcasting his voice on the 97.5 frequency.
So anyone who turns into that will hear him talk just throughout the day.
It's always going. It's being put out there. If you're
is this countrywide?
It's anywhere he goes, he will take over that frequency within a specific radius. Probably not that far. Probably, you know, like 1,000 feet or something.
But no
like
one
that.
Knows why.
He's a transmitter.
What I mean is, like, you would be like, I want to listen to what Hit the Deck Officer should say today. You'd be like, why is there someone talking on this radio station?
No, you'd be sitting there listening to like Soft 100, you know, Top Hits or Modern Country or, you know, whatever it is.
Jazz?
Whatever happens to be on 97.5 in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would take over that signal, and you would just hear him be like, "I'd like a large fry."
This is the most boring podcast ever. Pickles.
Yeah, yeah. He would just be like, God forbid you listen to the radio. He's in the bathroom. Like, it's not. Right. You know, there might be a use for it. I don't know what it is.
Well, there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go support the show if you can. $5 higher level, get your own superpower, just like Clark, Ryan, Jimmy, and hit the deck officer.
Deck officer.
There you go.
The guy enunciated.
So yeah, we ran long, Josh. So let's. Do you want to do one email, or what do you want to do? You're in charge.
Lucas from Austria says, "Since it's Easter, this is timely. I can't use it another time. I wanted to ask you, what were the creatively most successful resurrections in comics?" I think we're going to agree on this.
Well, I mean, the unthinkable would be Bucky, Winter Soldier. I still don't think. I think the world would have been fine if Jason Todd had never come back.
I mean, it would have made no difference to me whatsoever.
He hasn't really. Like, Winter Soldier has really ingrained himself into the fabric and the world of the Marvel Universe. He's a successful movie character.
Well, that's what makes it successful.
Jason Todd hasn't really done anything worthy of undoing that. There's been some good stories for sure. Judd Winnick's Red Hood storyline, which got adapted into a really terrific animated movie, were really good. But other than that one thing, I can't think of anything worth, you know, anything that really made it worthwhile. Like, they've been fine, but it's like, you know, damn, this is so great that Jason Todd's around. I never think that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing is that the idea of a resurrection in comic books has changed slightly by the fact that the cycle became a lot shorter over the last decade. So they would be like, we're killing him. So, like, I don't count Captain America's resurrection because it didn't really matter that Captain America was dead, or Clint Barton, or any of the other characters who have died 100 times now, that it doesn't matter. But
the
ones that were...
Side.
Good?
No, continue. Your thought.
It's the ones that, you know, the ones that matter. You know, Bucky was dead for 70 years or whatever it was, and Jason Todd was dead for, you know, 20 years or something like that, more, whatever. You know, and it was considered to be a somewhat finality, the death of Captain Marvel, something like that. That would be one that if they brought it back, like, it would feel like it was significant, sort of, depending on who you're listening to. I think Swamp Thing was on the edge of being significant, you know. So when they brought him back, though, I just felt like, yeah, Swamp Thing's back. It doesn't really matter. Super, you know, even Superman, I don't consider that to be, because when he died,
it was all part of the story,
right?
He was never supposed to stay dead,
right? This is what I'm getting at.
It's just a story beat. On the DC side, I think Barry Allen's been a very successful reboot.
Yes,
not reboot, resurrection. He's in the fabric of the DCU. He's
Death important. Of Batman.
He has a great series. He's a terrific character on television. Like he has established, okay, there was a reason. There was a point to it, and I'm enjoying it. Whereas whenever Jason Todd shows up, I'm like, oh, right, he's still around. What is he doing? What's the point of him? So I would say the Barry on the DC side and Bucky on the Marvel side.
I think it's a good answer. It's good answers.
All right, there you go. Contact at ifanboy.com if you want to send us an email. A bunch of people did, and we had some more lined up, but we went long on metal. We apologize.
It's true. You can go back in the feed one show, and you can listen to our Booksplode podcast book review on Green Lantern Earth 1 by Gabriel Hardman and Karina Becko. Spoiler, we liked it.
Yeah, really
liked
good.
It a lot. Is there that any other your, things coming up?
Yes. So in April, as we kick off April today with the release of this show, there will be two animation podcasts. There's the Suicide Squad movie, and then there is a Batman Crazy Ninja anime that Paul's really excited for that we're going to do. And then there'll be the Avengers movie that comes out in April, and then there will also be a Talksplode. So those are the sort of special shows you can look forward to in April. There'll be at least four of them. So twice as many podcasts for you this month.
That's a good time.
Yeah.
That's all right. Go to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts, like the ones that we're talking about and their antecedents. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm always worried I'm using it wrong, but I think I got that. Because Antebellum is before. Okay, we're good to go. Find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by following us on social media, such as Facebook.com/iFanboy or @iFanboy on Twitter. You can follow us individually, J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and C.S. Kilpatrick over on Instagram are the places to be.
Yes, if you like the show, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. It's the easiest thing you can do to help. If you can't be a patron, if you can't buy a t-shirt, the easiest thing to do is go to iTunes, click on the star rating. If you want, leave a quick review to tell people what you like about the show. It helps people find podcasts. It's the most important thing you can do to help a podcast, not just this show, Star Wars Minute, or any of the podcasts you listen to. Serial. Is that still a show? Can I keep making fun of it?
There's been two seasons, I think. It's been a while. It feels like it should be back soon.
The just side note related, this week saw the premiere of Alex Inc., the new Zach Braff show, which is about podcasting. And
can you guess what motion I just made with my hand?
My eyeballs rolled out of the back of my head watching it. But
I was watching the episode of Roseanne, and then the commercial after it was like, here's Zach Braff in a show. And then the other commercial was for like some other. I was like, oh, it's just networks are just like, what do we have that they know already? We're going to stop making new things. But it's Zach Braff plus a podcast. So the kids will like it. I don't know. I haven't watched it.
It's based on the Startup podcast, but it's just like, it's a very
that's smart.
Recognizable life. Introduce your mom to the podcast. Help us spread the fanboy love all around. Until next week, I'm Connor.
I can guess it wasn't like my life.
And no, that'd be a really sad show.
Ouch.
I mean, for the life of a podcaster.
Oh, sure. At least in the late 2000s.
Yeah.
I guess people can do it now.
Who knows?
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending,
which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.